Hi, everybody. This is episode number 47-ish with David Lesh. David Lesh is a skier, entrepreneur, owner of Vertica Clothing. This dude does a lot of things. More recently, he says he's been skiing and snowmobiling about equal parts, but he got into this industry and into this business by being a skier. We talk about a lot of stuff. We talk about how he got into it, how he's kind of progressed and kind of made it to where he is now, how and why he started Vertica Clothing, how he met Dan Bilzerian, what social media means to him and how much he loves China and all kinds of different stuff. So we'll get into the episode, but first, this episode is sponsored by Fisher Skis. Fisher Skis is a ski company that makes pretty much everything. I mean, it's the boot that I've been skiing on, is that Fisher Ranger Free 130. It's a phenomenal boot. It's a boot you can use inbounds and still ski super hard on without feeling like it's an inconsistent boot, without feeling like it doesn't have enough energy, and it still gives you everything you need in a downhill boot and in an uphill boot. So I'm super psyched to be working with those guys. Definitely check out some of their stuff. We'll be talking more and more about different products in the sponsored sections as we go through. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy the episode with David Lesh, and we'll talk to you soon.
So what's up, dude? Who are you? What do you do? Tell the people what the deal is.
My name is David Lesh, 33 years old, former pro skier turned entrepreneur, and now just loving life.
Cool. It's what does that mean, just loving life? Like, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
It really depends. In the wintertime, I try to really enjoy the winter. A lot of skiing, snowmobiling, traveling, occasional email or two. But yeah, just enjoying the winter.
Cool. How'd you get into skiing? I guess that's probably a good start.
I was growing up in Madison, Wisconsin, and skiing a 150-foot tall hill called Tyrol Basin. And there just really wasn't much else to do in Madison. So really looking for anything that we could do. And skiing was a good outlet for me. I was playing hockey and soccer at the time, and those sports required you to go to school if you wanted to actually play. And I had no interest in going to school. I just wanted to, smoke weed with my friends and be little hooligans. So skiing was a way for me to do something that I enjoyed and something I could push myself in athletically. And it wasn't a organized, club sport with rules and set times and that sort of thing.
So I had an argument with somebody last night about whether skiing's a sport or not. You think skiing's a sport?
Yeah, skiing's a sport. It's not a team sport, but it's a sport, of course.
Yeah, but there's like that thing where like you're not, there's nobody winning usually, Like there is competition, obviously, but there's no winning and there's no losing. Even if you play fucking basketball, like pick up at the gym.
Yeah, I think it's not a as organized and restrictive, structured sport as a lot of things, but yeah, I mean, it's a sport like, any other extreme sport.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. I don't know how I feel about it, and I don't know if I actually care either. Like, I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares what you call it? It's fun.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the point, right? As long as you're enjoying it. So how do you become a pro? Like, what's the next step, right? I mean, obviously you'd be good and people want to.
Yeah, I started winning a few local comps, and I was traveling around the Midwest just kind of, doing a few smaller comps. And after high school, I wasn't really sure what my next steps would be. Definitely wanted to take some time off. I'm not a big fan of school, so wanted to get as far away from Wisconsin as I could, and wanted to move to a city that had skiing nearby. So my options were like, Seattle, Portland, Reno, maybe San Fran, Vancouver, places like that. And I eventually settled on Portland. Had never been there before. Just packed up my 91 Honda Accord with all my shit, drove out there, and found a place to live, lived in my car for a week until I found a basement to live in, got a few jobs, started working, and started skiing like 120 days a year at Hooden.
Sick. That's fucking crazy.
Oh, you're asking me how I originally kind of became pro. So
answer it out. Yeah, you're walking out.
I was going somewhere with that. started winning a few comps out in Oregon, got my first sponsor, which was Rossignol out there.
Yep.
Lived out in Oregon for 2 years, ended up hating Oregon, moved to Colorado in 2005. And I was getting pretty good at skiing. I really had fallen in love with it at that point. And I wanted to move to Colorado to really be in better mountains and in a place that had more of the ski industry there. Mm. And a lot of the ski industry is located in Boulder and Denver. So moved to Boulder, started living in Breck. I've lived in Breckenridge every winter since 2005. This is my 14th winter up there. That was when I got my first real sponsor out here in Colorado that started paying me. And it wasn't much, but it was enough to kind of, you know, live on. And I was getting some travel paid for and started traveling around the world, started shooting with Rage and Level One and a few other local Colorado companies. And, you know, I was making enough money just to basically get by and live a fun life.
Yeah, and still go skiing. I think that's like for most pro skiers, it seems like the goal is just to keep skiing and having fun more than to actually make real money.
For sure, yeah. There's not a whole lot of money in it. And it was a great way for me to fund my being a bum.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. What didn't you like about Oregon?
Oh, fuck. the weather was miserable. You know, so you wouldn't see the sun for 2 or 3 months. Just a bunch of meth heads. I was broke as shit. I mean, a lot of it was circumstantial. I think if I went back now, yeah, I would like it better. I had a girlfriend who was just fucking everybody and lying to me about it. I didn't really make any friends. I didn't love the school out there. It was not my scene.
That's a lot of reasons. Yeah, that's a lot of good reasons. So, yeah. I guess that makes sense. I probably wouldn't like Oregon much either then.
You know? Yeah. So packed up my shit with a broken collarbone and, moved to Colorado.
So what was the next step? Like, you're a pro, like, what do you do after that?
I was mostly like a photo and video skier. So, you know, we'd go to Europe for a month at a time and shoot with Free Skier, Skiing Magazine, Ski Magazine, just on, you know, various featured articles. I was shooting with video companies, putting together segments. Working with various photographers to generate content for my sponsors. I was also helping some of my sponsors with, you know, various design work and trade shows and marketing and, you know, gathering a good team together and putting together content. And so I was helping with various other aspects of marketing as well.
So how did you progress into being an entrepreneur then? Like, I mean, did you just like that side of it? And
yeah, I always wanted to get into business. Originally wanted to go into business school, but they wouldn't let me in. My grades weren't good enough. I was going to college like maybe one semester every 2 years if I was lucky. So I was definitely not finishing it anytime soon. In 2009, I was maybe halfway done with college and skiing for a number of companies that I liked, but I never really found an outerwear sponsor that I really, really was stoked on. Nobody was making the stuff that I wanted. I skied for a number of outerwear companies over like a 3 or 4 year period and approached all of them and said, hey, you guys should let me design some gear. I think I know what people want. Just make a sample, put it on the internet. If kids are super hyped on it and they're, you know, begging you to make it, then maybe you make it. If not, then forget about it. Nothing, you know, nothing lost.
Yeah.
So I approached a number of companies asking them to give me some kind of creative control and let me get involved. And they all told me to go fuck myself. So I was really fed up in 2000 because I'm a taller guy, you know, I'm 6'1", kind of lanky. I wanted some tall gear that made me look steezy proportional, you know? And, so I actually took, I had some old shitty outerwear and I ended up cutting up 2 jackets and 2 pants, buying a longer zipper and sewing them together to make one suit. And I skied, it was just the worst looking thing you've ever seen in your life, but it was more of the sizing that I was looking for. And I skied in it all year. I actually got a bunch of photos published in it in a bunch of magazines. It's just this hideous yellow and orange, yellow and brown.
That sounds sick.
Yeah, it was brutal. but, you know, it really, I was just kind of hungry for gear that fit me and that had the features that I wanted, and nobody was making it. So in 2009, I started the company with, I had $0 at the beginning of the summer. And I had some sponsors who owed me a little bit of money. And by the end of the summer, they coughed up $2,000. Had to threaten to sue Vail Resorts to give me the $500 that they owed me. by the way, I hate Vail Resorts.
Yeah, fuck Vail.
Yeah, and that's why most of my Instagram posts, including that are on Vail Resorts, have the hashtag fuck Vail Resorts.
Yeah.
So they coughed up, you know, a total of $2,000, and used that $2,000 just to pay for samples and shipping and domain registration and hosting, just, you know, random little business costs. And I ended up starting the company for a total of $2,012.
Sick.
In the summer of 2009, yeah. And started pre-orders, used my reputation in the industry to kind of, you know, get people interested and have it be a business that they trusted. It wasn't just some fly-by-night thing by some random dude. It was you know, David Lesh starts outerwear brand.
Right.
So they placed pre-orders. They plunked down $500 up front, and I used that money for production and was able to, you know, blow up the company pretty quickly using my connections in the ski industry. And, kind of just grown from there.
Yeah. Why? So I get that you want clothing that fits you better, but why make it like clothing's a hard thing to do right. Like it's a difficult business to be in. Like there, it seems like every other fucking person has a clothing.
Everyone has a clothing company, but it's mostly kids like who just make stickers and hats and t-shirts and they get them embroidered or printed. There's not a whole lot of, startup outerwear, technical outerwear brands out there that stick around for at least for more than a year or two. You know, there's been a lot that have come out maybe in the last 7 years or so, but poof, they're gone a year later because, you know, these kids don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. So how did you figure out what you were doing? Because, I mean, like, you can't just fucking know.
Yeah,
right?
No. I mean, I didn't know anything about anything. I didn't know anything about fashion. I didn't know anything about clothing or stitching or, you know, I mean, I actually can kind of sew, but not, like, really. I can take a needle and thread and, you know, fix some shit. Yeah. But I'm not, like, you know, sewing together complicated outerwear.
Right.
And so I just kind of taught myself, did a lot of research on the internet, spent a lot of time going back and forth to China, which is, you know, pretty much where all technical outerwear is made, to China and Vietnam. And spent a lot of time learning, creating size charts, going to the ski shops, measuring other people's outerwear, figuring out how I want, you know, mine to be different. And also just a lifetime of skiing taught me what I wanted in outerwear. It taught me the features that I wanted. It taught me the fit that I wanted. It taught me the fabric. It taught me, you know, just how I wanted it to be put together. And so the culmination of that is what our outerwear is. I mean, it's a lot of interesting features combined with pretty technical fabric and a taller fit. So that's kind of what makes our stuff unique.
Yeah. Do you have advice for someone that wanted to start a company?
Do I have advice? Just be prepared to work harder than you've ever worked and to risk everything that you have. To really have to think on your feet and to problem solve like you've never had to problem solve before.
Yeah. It's being an entrepreneur is like a trendy thing right now. You know, like everybody on Instagram wants to be an entrepreneur and hashtag entrepreneur and all this shit. But like it's a lot of work involved.
It's a lot of work. Yeah. And most of these, you know, lazy current generation kids are not, I don't think they're cut out for the amount of work that has to be done. Their parents have been telling them their whole lives that they're so special and they're so smart and there's nothing that they can do wrong. And I think it just leads to sort of a lazy mindset.
Yeah. At some point you kind of got to be pushed in that way. Like you got to have hard times in front of you, especially when you're younger. Like it's important if you always get shit done as you want it. I don't think it ends up.
Yeah. I'm always curious how that works when kids like have everything handed to them. You know, how do they have the motivation to like do some shit?
They end up being shit bags, or they end up.
I think there's some kids out there who have well-to-do parents who have provided a lot of opportunity for them, and they still somehow motivate them. I don't really understand.
There's something,
how
it... right? Like, there's something that's motivating them. Like, there's got to be something. There's definitely people, especially here. Like, no offense to anybody that's listening that is this person, but like, there's plenty of people here that are just riding off of their parents' coattails,
which is totally fine.
I
honestly am jealous of those people. I wish that I could have more opportunity provided to me by my parents. I wish that life would have been a little bit easier for me. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just a matter of whether or not you own it and you accept it and you embrace it and you make the most of it. Or if you a lot of these kids who, you know, have everything handed to them, they sort of go through life pretending like it was their own work and their own success. And that generally irks people who are, you know, self-made.
I don't know. It's kind of a strange thing, I guess. It's not, and I guess it goes both ways, right? Like you say you wish you were like that, but like you're saying that with your current state of mind. Like when you're like that and you get brought up like that, you may not have that.
I'd like to think that if I was, you know, someone who had a lot of opportunity gifted to them, that I would own it and that I would still not be, you know, a piece of shit. I'd like to, and I do have a lot, you know, some friends on both sides that are, you know, came from nothing and also came from, you know, a lot of privilege and opportunity. And I don't, you know, prefer one over the other. It's just a matter of whether or not, you know, you own it and you make the most of it, or if you're just full of shit and you lie to everybody and say that it was, you know, your own success.
Right. How do you feel about all this social media stuff? Because, like, I mean, we kind of talk about this a lot on this show, and, like, I think I need to find a new topic one of these days, but you're good at social media, right? So, like, what do you like about it? What do you not like about it?
I've come to really love certain elements of social media, and I've come to dislike others. And the nice thing about social media is no one's forcing it down your throat. You can kind of choose the platforms you want. You can choose to engage or not. You can choose to be a bystander and just, you know, observe other people and not post anything yourself. So it really is what you make of it. And for me, like, I never got into Snapchat. I never got into Twitter, just like that verbal diarrhea over the internet of your every thought just kind of is nauseating to me. So I really, I actually only started Facebook in 2009 because you had to have a personal account to start a business account. So I wanted my, you know, Vertica business Facebook account. So I created my own. And of course, you know, Facebook sucked me in. So for a long time, I was, you know, into Facebook. And then when Instagram came out, I've always been a photographer, and I've always, you know, enjoyed taking really cool photos that capture the moment in the way that I see them. And Instagram was a cool way for me to sort of document my life and almost have, I don't, you know, keep a journal or anything, but it's almost like became like a journal of my life, a photo journal of my life, which it really appealed to me. And then when Instagram, you know, created the explore page with their, I think, pretty well thought out algorithm, it really does show you stuff that you are interested in based on who you follow and what you like and what you comment on. It shows you a lot of cool shit. So, like, you know, now I basically don't use Facebook at all, and I'm pretty much just on Instagram because it is catered to me. I only follow, you know, maybe 140, 150 people, and it's showing me, you know, all the stuff that I want to see. So for me, it's been super beneficial, you know, on a personal level. It's, you know, introduced me to tons of people. It's great for networking. It's obviously pushed, you know, my business in a lot of different ways. I've started other businesses in the past few years that have really been solely based on promoting them on Instagram. So I think that social media is an extremely powerful tool if you know, use it in the right way.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the consensus, is like, if you're using it as a tool, it's a good thing. If you're using it as your life,
I've got a lot of people whose lives are based, you know, around Instagram, and a lot of girls, Instagram model girls, who all they do is post to Instagram every single moment of every single day. They're changing outfits. They're taking selfies. They're going on Instagram. They're all, like, literally they're spending their entire lives on their phone, which is, I think, kind of a bummer. So I think there's definitely a happy medium to using it as a tool, but not, you know, having your entire life be revolving around Instagrams. Because when you're 50 years old, Instagram probably will have been long forgotten. And people will be like, oh, like, what did you do with your 20s? Oh, well, I spent it on Instagram. It's like, what's that?
It was an Instagram
so, you know, model, you'll, yeah, yeah, you're like, so you got to be careful.
And I'm not hating. Like, I'm not like.
No, totally. You know? I think there's a balance, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. But I mean, it also opens you up to a lot of, like, almost criticism from people you don't necessarily need, or it gives everybody a voice, you know?
For sure. I mean, people have always been criticizing me just before Instagram and Facebook. It was on internet forums and, you know, other various chat forums and whatever. So people have always been criticizing me since the beginning of my kind of, you know, ski career and Vertica and whatever. It doesn't really faze me too much at this point. There will always be haters, and the more there are haters, the more it means you're probably doing something that's interesting and worth talking about.
Yeah. Is that, why do you think they do it? Like, because they're fucking bored? Like,
Think there's a million reasons, but people, I think, in general are, you know, negative. They're unhappy in their lives. They are jealous of other people who are happier and doing bigger and better, more fun things. And there will always be people out there that try to rain on your parade.
Yeah. So you seem to be good friends with Dan Bilzerian. Is that
Bilzerian?
Bilzerian.
Yep.
How did you meet him? What's that about?
There you go. Met him on actually on Facebook. Friend of a friend introduced us. He was in Breckenridge and wanted to go snowmobiling. Friend of a friend kind of linked us together, and I made it happen. Ended up hanging out with him that week, and sort of hit it off, and started hanging out after that. Started traveling the world together, and now we're pretty good friends.
Yeah, seems like a good dude. Speaking, yeah, he's fucking good at Instagram too, huh? I mean,
he's the Instagram king, as they say.
Yeah, seems to post the shit that people care about for sure.
Yeah, he's a marketing genius for sure. Every one of his posts has a very specific train of thought behind it and has a reason for posting it. I mean, he's got a lot of content coming his way every day.
Yeah.
And he's very selective about what he posts, and he has very specific reasons for why he posts the, you know, the captions that he uses and who is in the pictures. I mean, it's all pretty calculated.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's your plan now? Like, what's the next thing?
Well, I'm in the process of starting a dog toy brand.
Okay.
yeah, called Fido Flyer. I've got a patent for a device that picks up and throws a frisbee without touching it. Similar to a chuck it, but it's for frisbees instead of tennis balls. Working on that. Got the patent for that. That just came through like in the last month or two. Went to China this spring looking for factories for that, which has been difficult. And I hate China, so it's never fun. I go there for like a month every year.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's brutal. Working on that, getting that going. I've got an order fulfillment company that we've been growing a little bit recently. And growing Vertica, traveling, skiing, snowmobiling, the usual.
Yeah. How do you keep it all straight? Because there's a lot of shit, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff going on always.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an iPhone. iPhone keeps it organized for me.
Yeah, that's a tool for real. Like, I don't know where I'd be without that thing. Yeah. Although I still can't keep shit straight or on time, or it's
Yeah, I set alarms and stuff. I'm smart enough to know how stupid I am. So
yeah,
I'm smart enough to know that I'm not gonna remember anything. And so if I need to do something, it's gotta have an alarm associated with it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we'll kind of see what happens. Yeah, I don't know where a lot of us would be without iPhone. Like, I don't even remember. Like, I had the first phone I had was like one of those Sony Ericsson fucking flip up. I don't know. And I had like, they broke like every 3 days, and like I'd have to get a new one. And but like, even then, it's like now my fucking 3-year-old, 4-year-old cousin has an iPhone. And it's like,
yeah, it's
what
crazy.
What is happening right now?
Little kids on phones.
Technology's
$1,200 phones. These little 3-year-olds are
on just
there.
Smashing it, playing games all day. It's like, it's
I do not have one game on my phone. That is definitely one
I don't
thing
either.
I do not do with my phone.
I don't either, but I feel like I should, especially like on flights. Especially on flights without Wi-Fi. Like the one I like took, I don't know, I must have got the shittiest plane in the entire world on the way over, and like no Wi-Fi, there's no like, there's barely those air vent, like there's no air coming out of the fucking thing. I'm like next to a big fat dude, and like it sucked. And like I had no games on my phone. You know, like that's a time when games would be cool.
I have basically refused to read my entire life. I've now had a number of books that have been recommended to me.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a pilot, I'm big into airplanes. So when I'm on a plane, I'll like open up an airplane magazine, or I will read one of the books that I have been recommended to read. They're generally business related books. So I actually read paper. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you. That's kind of I don't know if it's a dying thing. Like, I mean, people still read, I mean, I don't know. People talk about reading a lot. I don't know how many people are selling books and shit, but I don't know.
There's something about holding a book, you know, it's just, you don't have to charge it. It's not a Kindle that the battery dies on or whatever. It's just a book. It's easy. The thing's worth nothing. If you lose it, who cares? And you can toss it around. It's just something nice about it, having paper.
So you refused to, you didn't want to read, and now you do read. So like,
I think I've never wanted to do what people want me to do. And so like in school, they were always wanting me to read.
Yeah.
And so well, I was like, all right, well, if you want me to read, then I don't want to read.
Yeah.
So I think that was, and also I'm pretty ADD. Yeah. And getting me to like sit down and look at a piece of paper for a while is tough. So I think that's that probably both of those things combined equated to me not reading ever.
Yeah. School's an interesting thing too, right? Like, I mean, it's like a lot of the smartest people and the most successful people don't really do well. Like, just school's not really.
Yeah.
Thing.
You look at, you know, a lot of those very successful entrepreneurs out there, they're not going to school. Steve Jobs and those guys, they're like, fuck school.
Yeah. And they're right, kind of, because it's like school's kind of made to be. It gives you tools to be in like a cookie cutter mold. And if you just want to go do your shit,
yeah,
it's a little different. It's
for sure.
Hard. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm not really a big, I think everybody should go to school at least to learn how to read. I think that's a good start.
For sure.
Play,
yeah. Trade schools are cool. That actually teaches something. I mean, for me, I just never wanted to sit in a desk and be talked at for 8 hours. I wanted to be out there like learning it as I do it. I just want to, you know, be actually doing the thing that I'm learning, not sitting in a desk learning about the thing that I'm going to be doing.
Right. Yeah, it's fair. I agree. I mean, you got to do stuff. Like that's part of it. I think you learn more that way, but that's also some people, you know, like some people just learn by reading. That's all they know how to do.
Yeah,
and that's, that's fucking fine.
Everyone's brain works a little differently.
Yeah. So why are you here? Like why, are you here for the show? Do you live in Denver? What's the deal?
So I've got a place in Denver that I live at, you know, year round, but I've got a place in Breck just in the winter. So
yeah.
For the most part during the winter, I'm in Breck. I come down probably every week or two just to get my mail and do random errands and stuff.
Yeah.
And see some friends. I am down here this week to, you know, for SIA to walk the show and, see some people I don't get to see too often and just do random stuff.
What do you think about SIA, OR, that whole deal? What do you show in general?
I don't know too much. Obviously, OR and SIA are one now, and I don't know too much about the company OR, but the company SIA that I have dealt with in the past was pretty terrible. Yeah. We put on a trade show booth a number of years ago, and dealing with SIA was like the worst.
Yeah.
So I think SIA, for me, is definitely not something that I am interested in having a booth at or dealing with. But it's nice just to come, walk the show, see the new stuff, and kind of schmooze people I haven't seen in a while, and just sort of, you know, be there.
Yeah, it literally is basically just schmoozing at this point. Like, even for retailers, it's less important of a show because everything's online.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it is becoming less of a relevant thing. Most people can just place their orders online or on a, you know, spreadsheet. They don't need to physically come here every single year and spend however much money to get here and take time off and go look through all the booths. I mean, it does feel a little bit of an old style of buying stuff.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. And I mean, there are still a lot of old school buyers and stuff, but I don't know.
There's less and less every day.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a pretty grim way to look at it. But yeah, there is definitely less and less every day.
Yeah.
Does Vertica just sell online, or do you guys sell the retail?
We do some stuff in stores. I'm pretty strict about the stores that do carry our stuff. I don't offer anything on terms. I'm not going to be, you know, funding these stores. And a lot of them just kind of go out of business and they never pay their bills. So that's, you know, like one of the main reasons, for instance, like Armada has gone out of business however many times in the last few years.
Yeah.
And a lot of other brands like that have gone out of business because they just overextend themselves. They offer credit to these stores. These stores are going under by the day. They don't pay their bills. And then all of a sudden they liquidate all the gear. They file bankruptcy and you never hear from them again. So I just don't want to be a debt collector. I would like lose my mind if I had to like go collect money from people. So
that sucks.
I just make people pay up front, which definitely, you know, limits the stores that we're in, but it also eliminates a ton of hassle on my part. It helps, you know, my cash flow. I'm not having to fund all these stores' existence and their inventory. So
yeah,
we're in a number of stores around the world, but you know, it's more of a special arrangement with them. And it's not just like, oh yeah, you want our gear? Here you go.
Yeah.
So
how involved are you in the day to day?
I have, pretty much removed my, I mean, almost the first year I was doing a lot of the day to day stuff myself. But after that I did everything I could to remove myself from the day to day. I sort of knew that, well, one, I didn't want to do it. And two, I just knew that the more I kind of was able to focus on higher level tasks, the better the business was going to do. So I haven't really done day-to-day stuff in, you know, probably 8 or 9 years. So to answer your question, pretty much zero of the day-to-day stuff. I do some social media and I don't, you know, do any of the order fulfillment or customer service or that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, it's like you get sucked into it. That's part of it too. I mean, it's not like a fun thing to do, one, and two, like it's when you over involve yourself in a business and overextend yourself in a business, it's almost like taking away from what you're doing, right? I mean,
yeah, I think you have to not get burnt out. You have to just sort of focus on the things that you're good at and the stuff that you like doing, and divvy out tasks that, you know, that other people can easily do.
Mm. So what do you ski? Do you still ski, obviously?
Yep, I still ski. I definitely ski less than I used to. I definitely snowmobile more and ski less, but I ski probably once or twice a week and snowmobile probably, I don't know, 4 times a week, something like that.
That's a lot. What are you on for skis?
I ski for J Skis.
Cool.
So I've got a few sets of their powder skis and park skis, which I really love.
Cool. Yeah, they do a good job. We had Leventhal on a month ago, something like that. I mean,
yeah,
just
Jason's a smart dude. He's
super smart.
Yep, he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's doing that. What's the new company he's doing? I saw you're doing
Roll
it too,
with
right?
A Pro.
Yeah, what is that? What does it do?
It's a website/app, I think. I don't know if he's doing an app or not, but it's basically a service that allows fans or whoever to spend a day with a pro, whether it's a pro, you know, skier, snowboarder, photographer, industry person, whoever it is, it allows them to spend a day doing whatever. So, you know, maybe well, if somebody wanted to hang out with me, I'd take them flying or take them into the backcountry snowmobiling or, you know, shooting guns or whatever it is. And if, you know, somebody wanted to go ride with like a pro skier, they'd get to go, you know, lap the park with them for a day or whatever. You know, if it was a photographer, they'd get to shadow them for a day to a shoot or something like that. So it's basically just a chance to spend some time with someone you look up to and want to learn from.
Huh. Yeah, it's so is it a paid service? Like, I don't even know if I understand.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's like basically the fan would pay to do an activity.
Are they bidding on you or like?
I don't know how that works. I think that you can kind of set up rates. I don't think it's a bidding thing. I think like the person would set up rates for like different amounts of time or different activities, and then the other, you know, the fan would get to kind of choose what they want to do.
Cool. Yeah, he's a character, Leventhal. He's a smart dude.
Yep, for sure.
Super funny. I like when he posted that, I was like, what is he talking about? Like, you get to hang out with what for what? And it's just, I mean, but I'm sure it's going to work out. Like, it seems to fucking work out.
You know, I mean, obviously, I'm not super well known, but there's people out there that have tens of millions of Instagram followers or whatever. And for those people, it could be decently lucrative. I mean, you know,
who knows?
To go do something with Dan Bilzerian for a day, maybe, you know, it'd cost you 50 grand. I don't know.
Yeah.
So there is some opportunity. The more kind of following you have, then I think the more opportunity there is to make some decent money.
Yeah. So what else you got going on? What do you got? Like, what's the upcoming months for you?
I think I'm going to Caribbean here in the next week or two. Might go back to Asia in the spring for maybe a month and see if I can choke down China again. Nothing beyond that.
What do you hate about China? There's a lot of, everybody's got fucking shit about China.
I mean, I'm going to come across as so racist, but I just don't even fucking care. the air is just absolutely terrible. I leave every time, we're just hacking up stuff. The people are brutal. They're fucking rude. They have absolutely no concern for personal space.
Yeah.
They fuck you over every single chance they can in any kind of a business situation. The culture is, you know, as about as opposite as you can get from America. The food is absolutely inedible. Like, just I love Asian food and Chinese food in America, but holy fuck, do they eat some nasty stuff in China. I mean, it's just, you know, the air, the people, I mean, it just, everything is the worst. And I'm sure you could go to China and go see the Great Wall and stay in a nice 5-star hotel and sort of have, you know, a nice experience. But if you go to China every year and you're dealing with them, you know, for business and stuff, I mean, it's just fucking brutal.
No, I've never been, but I've heard that that's how it is. I heard the personal space thing a lot, actually. Like, they just fucking...
I mean, that's the least of it, you know?
Really?
It's like, fuck, dude. When I first went to China, when I started the company, I was like the most excited to go to China of any place in the world. Like, I loved Asian, you know, culture. I loved Chinese food in America. Like, I was just like this interesting, faraway, you know, ancient culture with tons of cool history and all that. And then, you know, I just started going more and more and more, and I just started hating it more and more and more.
It's got to be like a chore at this point, though.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
like,
it's brutal. And I try to go, I always like go to Thailand or Indonesia or, you know, some cool place, you know, Hong Kong or whatever over there, Philippines, for like a week or two just to kind of soften the China blow a little bit.
But, yeah.
No matter what, at some point you got to go to China and deal with it. So
what's a favorite place of yours that you've been to, like, that if you could go back to every time?
I like Thailand a lot. I've been to Thailand a bunch of times. The Canary Islands are pretty cool, off the coast of Africa. I mean, Japan's great. Philippines, those are probably the top places I've been.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool places. It's nice. It must be nice to just be able to go when you want to go places, you know, because I think that's a thing that a lot of people work towards, right? Is like, everybody wants to travel, but traveling is also kind of hard. Like, it's not that easy all the time either. It takes a lot out of you.
Not a lot of people are built for travel. A lot of people are built to like take a flight to Jamaica and go stay at Sandals for 5 days and never have to deal with anything.
Something gets delayed. And
to actually go, like, you know, travel with any kind of a budget and to be moving every day and doing all kinds of stuff and, you know, surviving in a place where you speak zero of the language and they speak zero of your language. I mean, it's, you know, it can definitely be trying, and it takes a certain kind of person to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's, It's a fucking thing, man. Awesome. Well, where can people find you on social media? Where can people find Vertica?
You can probably Instagram, I guess, is the best. My personal Instagram is at David Lesh, L-E-S-H. And Vertica Instagram is at Vertica, V-I-R-T-I-K-A.
Sick. Awesome. Well, thanks for doing this, dude.
I appreciate it. Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
Sick. That was our episode with David Lesh. Very interesting guy. It was great talking to him. It was a great medium. And it's it was nice to kind of hear some of his thoughts on things that I kind of had questions about. Once again, you can find him on social media at David Lesh. You can find Vertica at Vertica, Outerwear. And yeah, for sure. Follow us on social media. It is Out of Bounds Podcast or Out of Podcast on everything, including the website, which is outofpodcast.com. Once again, thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Fisher Skis for being our title sponsor for this year. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.